den and say, "It's a billion-pound industry. If I can just get 1% of the market, this will be a huge business." Market share in this context is meaningless. Personally, I've never felt the need to predict my market share. When I opened my first care home, I only cared that I could fill it with residents. I care about the size of my market, not my market share. Exit strategy. If you are seeking investment, then you need to be able to offer your investor a return. An exit strategy is the means by which an investor realizes their investment. The reason I want you to think about this now is because it's an important part of being an entrepreneur. So far, I've talked a lot about entering business and not too much about taking the profits. Remember, that's what an entrepreneur does. Realizing your investment, the fruits of your ingenuity, time, and labor, is the payoff for working so hard. However you're funding your venture, knowing your exit strategy is fundamental. There are traditionally three ways in which the equity in a company is released, and you should work out which suits your company best. IPO. This stands for Initial Public Offering, which is another way of saying stock market flotation. When companies are floated, a percentage of their shares are sold to the market, and these usually include the shares allocated to your investor. So, let's say I invested £500,000 in your company for 25% of the shares. When you float your company for £20 million, I would sell my shares, which would now be worth £5 million. Smaller companies can be floated on AIM, the alternative investment market, where there is less regulation and you don't need to provide 2 years of accounts. Of course, you don't have to sell just your investor's shares. You can sell some of your own too and take your first step to becoming seriously wealthy. Not all companies are suitable for flotation. If your company is not capable of creating that kind of wealth, you might like to think of other exit strategies, like selling the company or a management buyout. Case study. Name, Chris Gorman, OBE. Age, 41. Job, serial entrepreneur. Qualifications, 5 O-levels. www.chrisgorman.com. Born and bred in Hartlepool, I left school in the early 1980s when unemployment among school leavers was running high at 22%. Times were changing, and the town's traditional employers, in shipbuilding, steelworks, and coal mining, were losing contracts thick and fast, so there just weren't the jobs that a kid from a poor background like mine might once have got. As a teenager, I had to develop my formative money-making skills as my family couldn't afford pocket money. For example, I quickly realized I could make more money organizing the paper rounds for the newsagent than delivering the papers for him. And then, when I had a milk round, I realized that taking a bit of time to talk to the customers meant I got bigger tips. Regardless of the local difficulties, on leaving school I had ambition, and I talked my way into a management trainee job at the local Finefare supermarket. I was paid £36 a week, which was barely enough to live on, but I wanted to be my own man, so I moved out of home into a bedsit. I found out that the branch manager was earning £35,000 a year, and this motivated me to work hard with the goal of earning that kind of money myself one day. When I was 18, I had what I can only call a life-changing moment. I found a copy of Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People lying around in my building. I didn't have 50p to put in the electricity meter and couldn't watch TV that evening, so I decided to read the book instead. It was a revelation. I didn't go to sleep at all that night. I read the book cover to cover, and even though it had been written in 1936, it still seemed so relevant to me. It's all about achieving what you want out of life, and it made me realize that I wanted more and that I wanted to be wealthier. One of the lessons in the book is that you should regularly assess your progress. Take the time to figure out what's working, what's not, and what you want. Its basic message is that to achieve your full potential, you should invest time in yourself. And for me, it paid dividends. Within a couple of months, I got a new job as a sales rep for text lights, the scrolling red LED signs that were very popular in shop windows in the 1980s. I traveled all over the country selling them, and discovered I was very good at sales. I regularly took home £200 a week, which created a massive change in my circumstances. This motivated me even more, and I began to formulate my goal of becoming a millionaire by the time I was 30. When I was 19, I moved to London and got a job with a small mobile phone retailer, managing one of their shops. I was very successful there, which led to a job with Vodafone and earnings of around £60,000 a year. I bought myself a flat in South London and thought that life couldn't get much better. But then I met my wife Mary, and it did. When Mary got pregnant with our first child, Blair, we decided to move to Scotland to be near her family, and this presented me with the first really big financial challenge of my life. I bought my flat for £80,000, but the market had collapsed, and it was now worth £60,000. Our minds were made up. We were moving. So I had to take out a loan to pay the shortfall, and we moved into a council flat in Cumbernauld, £20,000 in debt. For the next 2 years, I worked incredibly hard at Securicorp's mobile communications division, eventually paid off the loan, and we went on to buy our own house in Renfrew. I transformed the fortunes of Securicorp in Scotland, and the company was keen to give me a promotion in London, but I knew by then that I wanted to stay in Scotland, and I'd also started thinking that I wanted to work for myself. I'd been reading personal development books, like Anthony Robbins' Awaken the Giant Within, and I was looking for a new challenge. One of my clients was a new mobile phone dealer called DX Communications, run by a young guy like me called Richard Emmanuel. Richard had also read Robbins' books, and we decided to go to one of his 3-day seminars in Chicago together, doing the firewalking bit and everything. While we were away, Richard asked me if I'd help him build the company. Everyone, apart from my wife, thought I was crazy. I just cleared my debts, and not only was I giving up what was now a £70,000 a year salary, but I borrowed £25,000 to put into the business. I was also going to be taking a pay cut to around £25,000 a year, which meant Mary would be the main breadwinner for the next 4 or 5 years. However, I never saw it as a risk. I saw it as an opportunity. I knew I could sell very well, and if it all went wrong, I figured I could easily get another sales job. My investment meant